Rick Rubin is one of the biggest music producers of the past few decades. He's worked with everyone from Run DMC to Johnny Cash. His new book isn't about the insider stories you might expect, though. It's more like a spiritual guide to making art. Rachel Martin talked to him about it for her Enlighten Me series.
I don't think of myself as a musician.
You do not?
No. I'm in tune with myself and I'm in tune with my taste. Mm. And I can express it clearly, and that's pretty much my job.
Are you always right?
No. No, I'm right for me, and that's all I'm trying to do. My job is to be true to myself. When you present a piece of work to me, I can reflect back what's going on in me. With as little noise involved, with as little, oh, but there's a release date. Oh, but how's the radio going to react? Forgetting all of the external baggage that weighs down the artistic process and getting to a pure, we're making the thing that we're almost, you could think of it as a devotional act. We're making something with our hearts and souls, and then we're sharing it with the world. And if people like it, it's great. And if they don't, we wouldn't change it because we've made it with our hearts and souls. And it's true. It's a true thing we're doing.
In preparation for this conversation, I watched the 60 Minutes interview that you did with Anderson Cooper. Lovely conversation. You know, they give a title to their stories, and yours had the word guru in it. He referred to you that way, characterizing you as this kind of person. I mean, that word carries a certain connotation. And I know it was used maybe a little tongue-in-cheek. I'm not sure. But how does that word sit with you as this kind of all-knowing, almost spiritual figure?
I think it has to do with the fact that for some reason, and I don't know why, in college, I decided to stop shaving.
And you think it's because you have a beard?
I think so. I think if I didn't have a beard, they wouldn't call me guru.
The book itself reads as sort of a spiritual text. I mean, really. Do you have a spiritual architecture to your own life?
I will say I'm a seeker, so I read across the board different practices. I'm looking at a bunch of books in front of me now. If you could see the books, you'd really laugh because it's just...
Tell me what they are.
Okay, so there's Wherever You Go, There You Are, which is a Jon Kabat-Zinn book on meditation. Below that is I Am That, Sri Niswargadatta Maharaj. Below that is Awakening the Third Eye. There's a book, 101 Things I Learned in Architecture School. It's a book called Entering the Tao.
All right. You've made your point. You're a reader and a seeker. Those are all of a piece, for sure. I mean, lots of us can... seeker is a thing that's sort of... Not to push back on you, but it's an easy answer. Lots of people are seekers. Yeah. Do you believe in God?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. I have a knowingness that there is a power greater than us that seems to animate everything. That's how I would describe it. It's like the thing that, however this system works, this world that we're in, this universe that we're in, however it works, I don't think it's accidental. I feel like there's some creative energy behind it. We have help. When we're making something beautiful, we have help. We're not working alone.
I read that when you were producing Johnny Cash near the end of his life with his last albums, that you took communion with him, that that was something that was important to him.
Yeah.
And you were enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
And you did it more than once. It became sort of ritual.
We did it every day. We did it from the time he got sick. I said, I've never done communion. And he's like, oh, it's a beautiful practice. Let's do it together. And then we did it together in person the first time. And then I said, well, while you're sick, should we just continue doing it every day? And he's like, great, let's do it. So we started doing it every day. And then when we were together, I would call him every day. And he would say the words. And I would close my eyes. And I would visualize I didn't have the wafer physically with me, but I visualized the whole thing and I experienced it with him every day. And then when he passed, I could still hear him doing it and did it, I would say, for about 6 months every day with him after.
Wow. I think that would change a person to do that. And because it's not like saying a prayer with someone. I mean, it is a highly mystical Christian ritual whereby you imagine the wafer you're eating is actually the body of Jesus Christ and the grape juice or the wine is the blood.
Yes.
You're not a Christian.
No.
What effect did that have on you, sharing that with him?
I'm a believer. You know, I'm I got to share it with him, and he was a believer. And this was his way of believing. So I got to experience his way of believing with him, and it was beautiful. And I truly believe it enriched my life. It's not calculable how powerful it felt.
Is art unfulfilled still worthwhile? And I'll say more. I ask this. This is just a totally selfish question that I don't know if I'm asking for forgiveness from you in some weird way. I don't know.
I forgive you.
Thank you. Are you sure? I don't even have to ask a question.
I forgive you anyway. Yeah. Whatever it is, I forgive you, but do ask a question.
I took a sabbatical because the news was burning a hole into my soul. And I decided that on that sabbatical, I needed to learn how to play a particular piece of music. You know, I'm not a piano player. I played, you know, as a child. Yeah. But I saw this, the film Nomadland with Frances McDormand. And the guy who did the soundtrack, I always mess his name up, Ludovico Einaudi.
Amazing.
And, oh my God, he's
amazing.
He's so amazing. And I could not get that music out of my head. So I was like, I need to try to play this music.
Yeah.
And I hired a teacher and I practiced. Yeah. And then my sabbatical ended and I had not mastered this piece of music. And I haven't tried since because I'm sort of embarrassed that I never did it. And so I guess my question is setting an artistic goal and not meeting it, is there still creative value in it for a moment?
Absolutely. And I don't know that setting a goal is the way to do it.
Hmm. Yeah, a lot of our culture is structured around that, huh?
Yeah, I tend not to set goals.
Really?
I feel like a goal could be a limitation. Like, I can remember a big, successful artist, singer in a band saying to me, I'm excited about our next album. We haven't started writing any songs yet, but we want it to be this kind of sci-fi punk rock thing. And it's like, okay, I'm listening. And then I said, what happens if the best songs you write turn out to be more like Neil Young's Harvest? And he's like, oh, that'd be great. Okay, so then it's like having the goal is like, that's not going to help you get there. It's more like start finger painting and see what happens. Did anything come from your piano experience that was like, did you feel more connected to the piano? Did you feel like you liked hearing playing the notes? Was it a nice meditation being at the piano? Can you go back to playing the piano for 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, whatever you pick the window without having this goal, but just I'm going to have fun making music for 10 minutes a day and see where that goes. That might be a really nice gift to yourself.
And also you forgive me for not having.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
You are forgiven. It's so funny. I often say things that I have no
authority.
Yes, I have no authority in granting
mandate?
Permission, but I do it just to break the spell in the artist's head. An artist was telling me a story about I hang out with my friends and we're out and we're having fun and I have an idea for a song and I don't want to step away from them and write down the idea. I'm kind of embarrassed. And it's like, no, you have to do that. It wasn't even an artist I'm working with. I said, no, I give you permission that when a song comes, you're allowed to do that. I'm giving you permission from this day forward. You can do that. Now it's ridiculous. I have no authority over him. He knows I have no authority over him, but somehow hearing it is like, it's like a key to a prison door opening. Yeah. So I'm very free with sharing the keys to the prison doors.
It's the beard, man. It's the beard.
Told you.
This book has been a big hit. Have you been overwhelmed by the response? And what have you heard from people?
I'm delighted and surprised. I could never imagine, because I think it's a strange book. I feel like, based on the questions you're asking, it's a strange book.
I mean, strange is the best, in my opinion.
I didn't know who would like it, but I knew I wanted it to exist. It's the book that I wish I had when I was young. And it would be a good thing if one person told me they loved the book and it changed their life. It would have, I don't know if it would have been worth 8 years of my life, but it would have definitely felt good to at least know at least somebody it did what it was supposed to do. I was also, I was in a fire maybe 6 months before the book came out.
And
I was in a fire and I was sleeping, second floor of a house. My wife and child got out. My wife said, "Fire, get out." I heard this and thought, okay, it's a fire. She's going to take care of it. I'm going back to sleep. And I went back to sleep. She was outside. And then I heard her screaming outside for help. And then I went to the window to say, "Stop screaming," when she said, "You have to get out of the house. The house is burning down." And she said, "Jump." And it was high and it was a hard floor. And I felt like I would have got hurt. So I didn't do that. I went back in wrong. I did everything wrong. And then I'm going towards the staircase on my hands and knees because there's black smoke everywhere. And I can't, I crash into a wall. And then I'm crashing into another wall. And then I start getting lightheaded. And I realized this might well be it. And I saw my wife and child outside and knowing they're safe outside. And the only thought I had was, I'm so happy the book's done, because at least whatever I know can go on.
It was such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you for talking to me.
That was NPR's Rachel Martin talking with music producer Rick Rubin.